At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello. Livestock farmers are facing forage shortages right across the UK, following a challenging winter and wet spring. In this latest podcast, hear from our experts at Mole Valley Farmers about how to deal with forage shortages while safeguarding cow productivity and cropping options that producers should consider to maintain feed resources for this coming winter. If you're in the middle of this situation right now, or are keen to gather more information and top tips, then please keep listening. That's all coming here on the Mole Valley Farmers podcast. I'm Seth Conway, and before we begin, let me encourage you to hit the subscribe button for more of these farming conversations wherever you're listening to us today. It means a lot and enables us to continue making these agricultural discussions. So let's get to it. Options for managing forage shortages this spring.
Thanks for joining us again on the Mole Valley Farmers podcast. I've got Lisa and Karenza here with me in the virtual studio. We've heard from you two before, and I think we've heard from you two before on a very similar topic. But this year, perhaps more than ever, we need to be discussing this and need to be discussing it right now. But before we do that, let's just say hello. Lisa, just introduce yourself first of all.
So Lisa Hamley, Head of Grassland and Forage Agronomy at Mole Valley Farmers.
And Karenza.
Hi, Dr. Karenza Hawkey, nutritionist and technical projects manager for Mole Valley Farmers as well.
I guess the elephant in the room, this rain that we've had, this constant rain, just how much of a problem is it causing out there at the moment?
Yeah, well, as you say, Seth, then we have to address the very big issue that's been the winter, well, autumn, winter slash spring that we've had, which has virtually meant constant rain. I think there's only been like 7 dry days since the beginning of December. So, it's obviously had a massive effect on the ability for farmers to carry out their daily business when it comes to, you know, field work. Not only have they, you know, potentially not been able to get fertilizer out, there was obviously because of a lot of extra rains, lots of slurry around. Cows haven't been able to get out to grass as soon as they would have liked to, which then has the ongoing consequences of forage shortages. I think me and Karenza is the main focus of our topic of conversation when we talk. We've got those things to address. So fields in pretty poor condition, but yet expecting to perform to the best they possibly can. So that's my challenge from an agronomy point of view.
Very similar from a nutrition perspective. It's, you know, forage management on farm has become the hot topic, and even more so than normal. You know, farmers always wanted to utilise their forage to the best of what the conditions allow, but the conditions this winter have just been so challenging. I'd say from a nutrition perspective, where people have got outside clamps and we've had a deluge of rain, it's, you know, the dry matter of that clamp is massively different every single day. So what the cows have actually been eating has been so variable from day to day. And, you know, I've heard stories of people leaving mixer wagons outside and then basically looking like a swimming pool the next morning because there's that amount of water left in the wagon where it's been raining. You know, and if you can't, if you haven't got the space to put your forage wagon inside, you know, the mixer wagon, it's just not working. So, yeah, feeding cows has been a challenge this winter, and now we're looking like we've got limited stocks everywhere. And another challenge to add to the pile, I think, for farmers out there at the minute.
Yeah, these weather conditions, I suppose, this is what we're being told we're going to need to get used to, aren't we? As the climate warms, then it's going to get wetter. That's just what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's that... not that we've had much predictability in the UK weather, but at least we've kind of known when the seasons are going to occur. It has been incredibly warm through this winter as well. So, you know, on the plus side, soils are very warm now. You know, looking at our weather data from our weather stations, you know, soils across the UK are very warm, which means grass is growing. Good news. The bad news is that, you know, with the amount of rain that's been onto the crops and the soils over winter, they're going to take a lot of drying out. And, you know, farmers, as Karenza said, are running short of forage. They want to get on there and get some, first cut in the clamp as soon as possible. The other thing which is worth mentioning, and, you know, Karenza hinted at that then, was, you know, silages have been incredibly, you know, challenging to manage over last winter. And one factor in that was the low sugars that we experienced this time last year. A bit of a similar spring, less water about, but also quite cold and not many sugars. But actually, we're seeing from our fresh grass testing that we're having coming back in that actually sugars on the whole are lower even than last year.
Yeah, and we're seeing a massive range out there in terms of the pre-cutting analysis coming back. So we're seeing a range of about 5 to 12% on a dry matter basis in terms of sugar, which is, you know, I think the average is lying about 8.5 to 9 at the minute, which is lower. You know, we don't really want it lower than 10 if we can help it. And if it's above 15, we're singing pretty, but it's challenging out there. And I'd say the NDF content, so the fiber content of those samples, is running higher than we'd ideally like as well. It is on the way down, but I'm not sure if it's going to come down enough for where we'd like it to be realistically. So challenging season ahead, I think, for that one.
So I guess with the situation as it is now, it's loosely broken down, isn't it, where farmers will be saying, yeah, I've got enough to last, or they're going to run out before the first cut is ready. So what really are the suggestions that we're putting forward, or ideas that we're putting forward to kind of address this situation?
So I think the starting point on all farms is measuring stocks, you know, looking at how much you've got in that clamp. You know, all the Mole Valley nutritionists are trained in how to do it. So obviously we can help with that. But it's just taking the length, width and height of the clamps, establish the volume, take a sample and get the dry matter, and then work out how many tons of fresh weight you've got, divide it by how many tons a day you're using, and that will give you an indication of how many days left you've got of that clamp. So it's a simple calculation to establish it, and it's being realistic with what you're using as well. You know, don't just count the dairy cows. Think, okay, so there's 200 kilos going to that group of young stock and 200 kilos going to that group of young stock. And what about the dry cows and those few beef cows you've got in that other shed? Taking a realistically look at the numbers of animals on farm, and if we can reduce those animals, that's, you know, a bonus as well, because that's less mouths to feed. But it's just challenging when there's a lot of TB about and that sort of thing. So it's balancing up all the different components on farm at the minute. Looking at that regular assessment of forage stocks. Some of my accounts, we're doing it weekly at the minute, just to keep on top of it as much as we can with the changing dry matters with the weather. Need to get the most out of what we've got there is my personal view on it at the minute.
And I think also from people who do go out and graze and have been, holding off, then potentially there are some drier fields out there now. Not maybe all of them, but the fields are draining very, very quickly. As I said, the soils are warm, grass is growing and they are draining. So it might be a case of, keep an eye on that weather forecast and having, you know, some on-off grazing to try and, retain your silage stocks and give them some opportunity to get some dry matter intake from being out in a field. So that, you know, there's some very big challenges. And I'm always saying to Karenza, it's like, can we do anything about the stock numbers, Karenza? Because there's all those secret feeders out there that, we're having to feed. But I understand, you know, as you say, TB and all those other considerations. So we've just got to manage what we've got out there. And, you know, what we've got out there, actually, in some situations, said the soils have been warm. We've got a lot of crop, a lot of grass. So the newer lays, that have got hybrids in or Italians or newly established lays, there's a lot of grass out there. The challenge with some of those lays is that there's a lot of dead material at the bottom, because grass, as it grows, the oldest leaf naturally dies off, and then that will be at the bottom of the sward. just, you know, just in ready in a silage situation to be picked up if cut too low and taken into the clamp, which is, again, what we don't want. There'll be a lot of soil contamination on that. Obviously, with rainfall as it's been, soil splashing up. Again, that will be taken into the clamp and you know, the potential for a, you know, incorrect fermentation or a poor fermentation, producing, you know, VFAs, etc., that we don't want into silage. I don't know what you think about that, Carenza.
Yeah, basically, we just want to maximise out on our lactic acid and control the amount of other undesirable VFAs and get the ratio right. You know, we should be pushing for a 5-to-1 ratio. It's challenging to get there on lots of farms, but that's where we should be aiming for. But obviously taking into account the conditions that are out there at the moment and getting the best of what we can get off Lisa, with, like you said, without it's the bottom of the grass is dying off potentially. It's utilising what is there that's good and maybe adjusting the height of the forager and that sort of thing in order to maximise the best opportunity out there.
Yeah, got that definitely right. What I was going to say about the forager, just picking up on what Carenza says, you know, lifting the cutting height could be massively beneficial this year. You know, 5 to 6 centimetres for your standard lays, and then potentially even 7 to 9 centimetres for something, you know, hybrids with higher growing points or new lays that have got extra risk against them for soil contamination, where they've been more open through the winter, so the soil's more likely to have splashed up onto the grass. So yeah, there's precautions that you can take in advance of that it getting actually inside the clamp. The other thing is, of course, we haven't been out and rolled any fields because it's been way too wet. So whatever situation it went in the autumn, i.e. so if you took a late cut and there was some tyre marks or you've had outwintered stock, then the soil, you know, the height of where the soil is when you're cutting could be higher than you think. Like, so if you've got mounds and divots and that type of thing, again, potential for bringing in soil.
So if people are short though now and they've done those calculations, Carenza, and they're thinking, okay, yeah, I've got to be realistic about this. You know, should they be asking questions now about alternative feeds, forage extenders? Is that really what they should be focusing on?
I think it's, you know, even if you can get out and cut, you know, at the moment we've got people who are silaging as we speak, you know, as we're recording this, we know they're out getting stuff off the fields, but ultimately that's got to go sit in a clamp for a few weeks at least. And that gap we've got to fill with something, and if you've got no forage, then we've got to fill it with something else. So in terms of the alternatives, we've sort of got two brackets. You know, we can go down the alternative forage route. Has your neighbour got any silage you can buy off them? Or another option is, which we've seen some people doing, is they're actually zero grazing the grass that's out there. So they're going out, cutting the grass, bringing it in fresh for the cows to eat. So that grass is being utilised. Just not in a clamp. It's basically like they're grazing inside, which is working really well in some places, but you've got to have the setup to be able to do that. Another option is straw, but we're all very aware of where the price of straw has gone in the last few weeks, and that's taken a realistic financial view of the value of straw versus the value of buying silagen. And then other people are feeding fodder beet and that sort of other alternative crop to a higher level than they normally would, and replacing forage in that way. So there's different options in terms of alternative forage. And then if we look more towards the alternative feed side of things, we've got like alternative forage extender nuts and blends and different products that are basically come out of the compound feed and blending sites, which we can replace 2 or 3 kilos of silage with a kilo of this, just nice and simply, really straight swap in terms of going in. And then another option is sugar beet, soya hulls as a straight into farm, or a mix of like a moist blend type thing. So there's loads of different options, and it depends on the individual farm setup, what you're doing, what other things you're feeding. But through like a silage analysis, ration breakdown, reformulation, we can come up with different alternatives and cost it out and see what the best option is. And in some cases, it's only going to be for 6 to 8 weeks, and then we'll be back, hopefully, where we want to be, to put some positive spin on it. So it's, yeah, there's options available, and it's a by farm individual assessment, which is required really, Seth, to see where we need to take these farmers to help them out.
And a similar assessment as well, I guess, for those that are on maize silage.
Yeah, definitely. I think that where we've known we've been tight on grass silage, people have fed a bit more maize. Or, you know, us nutritionists have utilised the maize that's available to feed the cows. And maize is always better after Christmas, so it's helped perk the cows up where the grass silage hasn't been quite there. But obviously, as we're talking about grass silaging season now, maize silage we're not going to be doing until the autumn, and we've got to make that maize clamp last, because the cow is always better if her diet is similar for 12 months of the year. So if we can keep that maize in her ration for 12 months, she's not going to become unsettled. So we need to utilise the maize for as long as possible. So that might mean pulling it back from different parts of the farm that might not need it as much. You know, is it better off being in the high yielders and not being utilised somewhere else on farm? But again, it's that continual monitoring those stocks, regular assessment, monthly assessment. You know, how much have we got? How much are we using? How many animals are eating it? And just do the calculation over and over again. And that's the only way we're going to keep track of how much is there. And then we're not going to have a shock come 31st of August when we think, oh, we've got only got a week left and it's another month until the maize comes out the field. So, yeah, very similar situation.
Carenza, tell me if I'm wrong, but, you know, cows, I know we've all had a very long winter and the cows presumably have had a very long winter as well. So I'm guessing these changes need really careful management. So, you know, you're being hugely involved in all those changes from a nutrition team.
Yeah, definitely. It's just managing, you know, a cow will take 2 weeks to adapt to a new diet change. So we need to, anything we do or change, it can't be a sudden overnight change. We need to think about it, implement it through and give her a chance, but also not ask her to change too much. Because if you're constantly asking her to change every 2 weeks, she's never going to settle down properly. And at the end of the day, we want nice, settled production animals that are going to do a job and pay their way as well.
No, it makes absolute sense. And you just said about the maize there, you know, and a lot of autumn crops didn't manage to get put into the ground because the winter came in so early. And then we've been late getting into the spring. So, you know, people might want to be thinking about putting an extra field into maize if their maize is running short, because, you know, that's one way of getting a lot of high dry matter yield and good quality energy pretty quickly. So, you know, reviewing where they are, like you said, compared to where they would normally be, because it might be that they're going to need to top that back up for this winter. And again, we've got to take those opportunities where they're coming. We've got a very short growing season now.
In terms of like the whole crop situation, Lisa, how are you seeing that out on farm? Has stuff gone in the ground or...
Yeah, some people are managing to get cereals in the ground now. You know, it's what, the 19th, and we would ideally like to have the spring crops in the ground. And the challenge is that spring crops are always lower yielding than winter crops. So immediately, if you were planning a winter crop and you've had to divert that to spring, you're going to have going to be down on yield. And also the later we get into this month, so some very heavy, you know, heavier soils will take longer to dry out. In which case, you know, the yield is, you know, it might not even be worth putting it in by the time we get towards the end of this month. So, yeah, it's been extremely, extremely challenging. But, you know, changing things up, like saying, looking at the whole of the options out there could mean that when we're coming into this autumn, they'll be very grateful that they've got that extra field of maize or whole crop coming in. Just going back to the grass for a minute, and you know, I say making those opportunities. If people are able and they've got a lot of grass out there already, making those decisions about cutting it, or maybe having some fertilizer on, or getting the slurry out and waiting. The only way to really do that is to go out and walk the fields, because there's some fields that are older lays or on heavier ground that are slower to get started in the spring. You know, they might be a good few weeks away, But then you've got fields out there that are just ready to cut. You know, they're up to your knee and just want to be put in the clamp. Now, if you have got fields like that, you know, you might not end up having a whole first cut silage. You might end up with a partial first cut silage. And then resetting those fields, getting your slurry and muck out, getting your fertilizer on if you're in a conventional system. And then your opportunity is to grow a lot of grass in the peak grass growing season, which is now. So you could potentially have two cuts when you would normally only have one. Like you said, for instance, you know, some people are out cutting this week. I know quite a few people that are going to want to cut next week. So we've been madly out doing pre-cut testing just to make sure that the nitrates are free. And giving help and advice on silage additives, because just going back to that sugar, soil contamination, you know, if ever there's a year for reducing your risk and having an insurance policy with the, you know, potential shortages of grass coming out of this winter and going into next winter, then we want all the grass and the best quality we possibly can.
So just talk us through that, Lisa, about, because for some farmers, that's not kind of something that they regularly do. So putting a silage additive in, just talk us through that.
The silage additive will help to dominate the fermentation in the clamp. So yes, 100%, you know, good bit of sunshine, high sugars, as myself and Chris were saying, the chances are you're going to get a good fermentation. But if you add in the negatives this year of potential soil contamination, of lots of rain through the winter, low sugars, you're chancing that you won't get a good fermentation. And if you get a poor fermentation, that's your winter forage that you're going to then be challenged to feed and have to, try and make up in other areas. But it never works out the same as being able to balance against a really good quality, well-fermented silage, does it, Carenza?
I like a good fermented silage. It makes makes a nutritionist's job slightly easier.
Yeah, so I think, it's always about managing the risk, and having walked, a fair few fields in the last couple of weeks, there's more risk than there would be usually when it comes to having done all the groundwork, if you see what I mean. You know, I say we haven't rolled the fields. They've been subjected to a hell of a lot of water again through the winter. So we're uncharted territories, really. And whatever you can do to help achieve a good fermentation will absolutely pay its dividends. And the other thing, just thinking that through, is chop length as well, because dry matters could be very variable, and that's another thing about walking the fields and having really a good look at what's out there, because some of it, let's say, it's going to be very long, could even be going stemmy by the time you can get on and cut it, which makes clamping it very difficult. So you're aiming for 30% dry matter. So thinking about the chopping height and then the chop length, about how it's going to ensile, ensuring that you can get good compaction is essential. So some of the, an example I'd probably use is a very lush, Italian ryegrass that's probably gone in the autumn. They're looking very good in the field at the moment. And if you chop that too short, then the chances are that, you could get slippage. Thinking about, and then on the alternative, if you've got something that's quite stemmy out there and you cut it too long, then it's going to be really hard to ensile. So just knowing what you've got out there and treating it accordingly. If you were, Carenza's very experienced in how a feed mill works, there's a lot of detail that goes into making a quality product. It's exactly the same with making silage, Seth.
As farmers are, obviously trying to deal with all of this at the same time, are there any other sort of top tips from our experiences that we could give them at this time?
Well, I give a shout out to the contractors now, because those guys have also had a horrible winter, and now they're faced with putting all the slurry out, cutting grass, putting the maize in, putting cereals in, all virtually on the same week now. So give your contractor the heads up, tell them exactly what you want in advance and have a plan. This is why we're doing the fresh grass testing, so we can know that those grasses are ready to cut, they're nitrate free, and your contractor can come as soon as, you know, you want them to. So give them the heads up, you know, explain the whole system through. It'll only benefit you if you have that conversation prior to them arriving on farm. Don't let them arrive to farm and they go, yeah, well, I want this and I want that and I want this, because, you know, they're going to be extremely busy. So, yeah, give yourself and your contractor a helping hand by giving them the heads up of when you're most likely to want to cut your silage.
So from my perspective in terms of the nutrition, top tips is that it's the monitor and the measure. It's across the board. Measure and monitor what you've got. Adjust if you need to, but I wouldn't, you know, don't unnecessarily adjust if you don't have to. In terms of the grazing piece, quite a nice little fact that I learned this season when we were doing our spring sort of lead up, that cows can actually achieve 90% of their daily grass intake in the first 2 to 3 hours after you turn them out to milk them, after milking, sorry. So once you've turned them out, they can eat a hell of a lot in 2 to 3 hours. And if you've got that short, sharp window where you need to, you know, get as much grass into them as possible, you're not going to ruin your fields. It's a good opportunity to utilize some of the grass that's out there. And also I've seen quite a lot of farmers trying to only put cows through a gateway once where physically possible to try and help the gateways where they've got hilly ground. It's working well. But obviously that's a challenge sometimes when you've only got one gateway in a field. So
it makes a massive difference to the soils if you can do that, for sure, for recovery time and preserving the grass that you potentially need for the rest of, well, you will need for the rest of the year. And I suppose, you know, from a final point, you know, once we get this first grass in, first cut in, you know, we want to be knowing how much we've got in there so we know what the challenge is for the rest of the year. So it's all very well. We're all very focused on first cut, and absolutely rightly so. But first, second cut, it starts the minute you cut that grass. So, you know, getting your slurry out. So test that slurry. I always getting asked all the time, you know, how much fertilizer shall I put out, Lisa? And I was like, well, how much slurry have you put out? Then you can use the book value, but 9.9 times out of 10, it doesn't directly correlate to the book value of the slurry. So get your slurry tested, know what you're putting out. Then you can accurately predict how much bagged you're going to be putting out with it if you need to. And then you'll know potentially when your next cutting date is. So we can be really accurate about this. But again, you've got to prepare in advance. So the minute that grass is going in the clamp, getting the next nutrients out in order to prepare for second cut. And exactly the same when you go third cut. And if you're doing a fourth cut, a fifth cut, everything is like as much precision as you possibly can in order to take the opportunities of weather windows. Because that's the variable that we literally can't guarantee. But if we can make as much of the preparations as accurate as possible, then hopefully we can work with the variable.
And I guess the other thing to add, which our farmer shareholders, our members will know, but it's worth saying again, is talk to us, isn't it? You know, there's always somebody there to speak to if you've got that question about, oh, what should I be doing right now?
Yeah, absolutely, Seth. I mean, we have people, you know, we're phoning day and night basically to ask, and we love it. We really do love it, because if, you know, we can help them be successful and add that little bit of accuracy or have a different thought process, maybe. We all know, I mean, like Karenza and I ask and we speak to each other all the time. It's so great to bat things off somebody. And even if you go away thinking, no, I'm just going to do what I was going to do anyway because I think I'm right, then at least you've had a second opinion, and maybe, you know, you might change something and it'll be for the better. I think the massive thing at the moment is this fresh grass tested. It's really helping that decision making. So wherever you can utilize, whether it's tech or people or experience to, you know, advance your knowledge and make best decision making, again, it's reducing the risk.
Definitely. And I'd say, you know, from a a sample perspective, you know, all of our guys can come out and take samples easily. But I deal with some farmers down in West Wales, and I live in Somerset. I leave them bags, and they, you know, they pop it in the post, and then we have a chat on the phone about it. So there's so many different options there in terms of getting samples off, and, you know, they're all coming back really quickly at the minute, which is what we need to help make those decisions quickly, where, you know, like Lisa said, with the contractors, we've got to make a quick decision sometimes, and to help inform those guys in what they're doing daily. So,
and I'm sure Carenza's probably hopefully going to agree with this with me this time. But you know, we'd always rather have not have a problem. So, you know, if you've done something, you know, Carenza will be faced with feeding this silage that we're going to be making in a minute. It's going to come around quick, and we'd much rather be part of the solution than trying to solve a problem, although we're obviously excellent at that as well, aren't we, Carenza? But you know, well, so you know, we want to help with the solution.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found the conversation interesting, and we really value that you chose to listen to our podcast. If you haven't already, then please hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening to this today. And until next time, I'll speak to you soon.